Welcome to the Hometown Foods Let's Talk Guthrie County. I'm your host, Marcus Mackey. Joining us today is Iowa House District 23 Representative Bray Sorensen.
All right. Would you be able to explain the quickness of the bill that got out of the House and Senate to fix a property tax issue concerning some that lived in a multi-residential area that wasn't multi-residential?
This was an issue that was brought to the legislature really early in the session, and there was a sense of urgency on the bill because local governments, they need time to set their budgets, you know, here soon. And so we needed to make a decision on how we were going to handle the issue sooner rather than later.
All right. And would you be willing to share with us how you voted on a bill to cap medical malpractice that was also signed into law by Governor Reynolds? And what were the advantages of such legislation?
I saw it as a rural issue. You know, no amount of money can ever make up for the loss of a loved one. But in Iowa, massive non-economic damage awards have increased exponentially. They drive up liability costs and they make the cost of providing health care in Iowa less competitive. One massive award for non-economic damages can close a smaller hospital or a physician's practice. And, you know, that leaves Iowans without access to care that they may need. 28 other states have currently put in a hard cap on non-economic damages or even total damages, and including all the surrounding states. Iowa currently ranks 44th in the nation for physicians per capita, and we definitely need to compensate people for medical injuries, but we also need to keep Iowa's healthcare industry intact and making sure that, you know, we have healthcare for Iowans when they need it, especially in rural Iowa.
All right. And then are there other bills that may be coming forward dealing with healthcare, maybe not on the cap on the malpractice issue, but maybe to help in some other areas?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we're dealing with workforce shortages across the country and everything. And, specifically here in Iowa, I think there's a no cap or not a no cap, a cap on non-economic damages for truckers. And I think that bill, I'm not sure where that bill is. I'm sure it's in judiciary somewhere, but I don't know where it's at in the process. But I would assume that it will make it to the floor. I don't know if it'll be brought up for debate or not. That's kind of up to leadership.
All right. And then could you explain how the funding will work for ESAs and then who would have access to those funds and if those funds could be banked up until a certain age?
Sure. So a third-party administrator would, be in charge of the fund. And it's hard to know exactly how the process will work because we have to put out an RFP to find the vendor. But we imagine it'll look something like a 529 where the money will be in an account for parents and the money can only be withdrawn if being spent on qualified expenses such as tuition, textbooks, etc. And to your will it bank, I believe it will continue to roll over until the child graduates. And then once the child graduates, it will revert back to the general fund.
Okay. And were there any reasons you kind of went with that, the rollover until they go out and then move it back to the general fund?
I mean, I didn't write the bill, obviously, but I can't think of what the reason was right now other than I know there are different costs for preschool than elementary than high school. My guess would be that rolling it over, you know, as it gets more and more progressively expensive to be in school, that that will help defer those costs. You know, textbooks get more expensive. High school is generally more expensive, you know, so on and so on.
Okay. And would you be able to explain the main components of the House's proposal for property tax reform?
Yeah. So I'm not in Ways and Means, so I'm not, you know, we're at the front seat of the table for this bill, but and it's still working its way through the committee process. I know negotiations are going on with the Senate as well, so I'm a little hesitant to, you know, dive into the details of the bill, but the original draft, what it would do, I wrote about this in one of my newsletters, but it would provide certainty for taxpayers by reducing the levy to $5.40. It would increase transparency requirements, and then it would cap assessment increases. I know those are the main things, but like Ways and Means and Appropriations, they meet and get, you know, their work gets heavy at the end of session. And also at the end of session, some of the policy pieces that have made it, and then some of these bigger bills, there's a lot of bargaining back and forth between the House, Senate, and the governor, and things change. So, you know, my advice is if you're following this bill and you're very interested in it, don't lock in on what is being said now or what's in the bill now. Make sure that you're following the process of amendments and negotiations, because it, you know, things like this will change.
So it's basically kind of, it came in as one thing, and after some time it's changed into something maybe not completely different, but it is different from what it started as.
That would be, again, I'm not in Ways and Means Committee, and yeah, so I'm not as up to date on that conversation as I should be. But yes, to my understanding, it will change. I'm not sure where, and I would assume that those overarching ideas I gave you, like reducing the levy, increasing transparency requirements, and capping assessment increases, are probably going to remain in the bill in some way. But who knows? Maybe one of those gets taken out in a bargaining, maybe something gets added, and maybe, you know, the reduction of the levy rate is moved around. You know, things like that can change and will change generally as we get late in session.
All right. And are there any other updates on other bills in the House from your committees that you serve on?
Sure. You know, the committee I chair, Economic Growth and Technology, I got passed to the floor the Consumer Data Protection Bill. That's a framework of protection for online consumers' data. And so for everyone's knowledge, consumer data protection refers to the measures and practices put in place to safeguard the personal information of individuals who use goods and services provided by businesses or organizations. So this personal information can include like names, contact details, financial data, health information, or other sensitive data. And it's the responsibility of the business to ensure that the data collected from their consumers is used for the purposes it was intended, and that it's not accessed or used by unauthorized individuals or entities. The objective of the consumer data protection is to ensure the data is not misused or abused, and that individuals have control over how their data is collected, stored, and used. And so we've got that framework heading to the House floor, and I hope to see it pass both the Senate and the House and get to the governor's desk, get it signed. And its implementation date is set out a ways, so we will have, you know, another full session at least to kind of edit the framework or bring it more up to speed. I know technology moves a heck of a lot faster than government, and so just giving us some time to set the framework in place and then, you know, revisit it to see what needs to be brought up to speed or what needs to be edited. And then, of course, with this bill, I always remind people that the federal government really should be acting on a consumer data protection bill for the entire country, not just relying on Iowa or each state to make their own. We kind of need blanket coverage from the federal government, but I know states right now are acting. Five have already passed it. I believe we'll be the sixth if we can get it done. And so hopefully we can be a leader on that.
All right. And then besides the cybersecurity bill, is there anything else you've got going on?
There's a host of other bills. I passed out of transportation a CDL third-party testing bill, which would expand, you know, to other entities to allow them to be able to third-party test for CDL to take stress off of staff. There's a few other bills that have come out of my committee, Economic Growth. There's some bills being discussed, some of the governor's bills, some of the State Department's bills are sitting in committee now, and they're just bigger bills and need some time to kind of sit with the committee, let them be able to go over, you know, what they all are, what aspects and areas of code do they touch and everything. And just some of that stuff just takes time to, you know, allow it to sit out there and allow the lobbyists to get their pleas in and then allow us to kind of comb through all the details. So. Yeah, if you want to keep track of all that stuff, legis.iowa.gov is a great resource to go on there. You can type in keywords if you don't know the bill number, but if you know the bill number, that'll get you there a lot quicker. And you can kind of keep track of not only the bill and amendments as it's changing, but also lobbyist declarations. So you know kind of, you know, who's lobbying for, who's lobbying against, any kind of financial impact. There's financial disclosures and things on there as well. It's just a great resource to kind of keep up on, you know, what's actually going through, and, you know, there's no media spin on it. It's just, you know, simply just the facts of what legislation is coming through.
All right. Thank you very much, Ray.
Yeah, no problem.
That was today's Hometown Foods. Let's talk Guthrie County. Discover today the many advantages of shopping with your hometown team. Hometown Foods in Guthrie Center, Panora, and Stewart. If you missed any of today's program, you can find a recording of it online at raccoonvalleyradio.com under the podcast tab.